Cully Air Action Team and Sarah Clark of the South Portland Air Quality Group all about the toxins in Portland's air. We thank you for tuning in to KBOO today and for becoming a member at KBOO.fm. You can do that very easily today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Soul City Supper Club concert series on Saturday, July 2nd at the Star Theater in Portland. This month features local soul artist Ronnie Wright with new vocal diva Tamara Stevens and surprise guests from the Bespeak Project. The event will also have guest DJs, door prizes, and more. Again, that's the Soul City Supper Club concert series with Ronnie Wright and Tamara Stevens on Saturday, July 2nd at the Star Theater, 13 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, the hallmark event for the Oregon Food Bank. This year, the festival will be held July 1st through 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. Everyone will need a pass this year to see such artists as Dr. John and the Night Trippers, Liv Warfield and the Special Horns, Curtis Salgado, and many more. More information about passes, the performers, the role of the Oregon Food Bank, and more can be found at kboo.fm/WBF2016.
It's 11 o'clock. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Stay tuned for The Recovery Zone.
Hi, you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and this is The Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. But here in Portland, breathing the air has been compared to drinking the water in Flint, Michigan. And Multnomah Air was ranked 58 out of 3,200 counties. That's 3,200 counties. We're number 58 nationwide for the dubious distinction of having air that causes cancer. It turns out that almost every neighborhood in Portland has air contaminated by dangerous levels of carcinogenic heavy metals and chemical compounds. Portlanders have responded to this information as a call to action. And today I have here with me in the studio representatives from three neighborhood action groups who want to talk about what we're dealing with and what can be done. Alma Velasquez of the Cully Air Action Team, Sarah Clark with South Portland Air Quality, and Jennifer Jones and Jessica Applegate of the Eastside Portland Air Coalition. And after we get going, we'll probably be taking calls from listeners. That's 503-231-8187. So I just want to welcome all four of you here. It's really great to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And we're going to start. Maybe I can start with Sarah. What got you involved in this?
The moss study.
The moss study.
Yeah. Waking up in February and learning that I live at the center of an arsenic hotspot, and that there's also this nickel issue.
And where do you live?
I'm in Brentwood, Darlington.
And that's near Precision Cast Parts?
It is near Precision Cast Parts,
and,
yes.
And so you just realize suddenly that you have a lot of, what do you breathe? It's cadmium there or arsenic? Or?
There's arsenic, nickel, and cobalt are kind of the top identified hazardous pollutants mm-hmm. over there. But there's been issues, you know, with titanium and I think there's a lot more to be revealed.
And the funny thing is I think that the whole thing with Precision Cast Parts has been going on a long time.
Right.
But suddenly it's just evident, totally evident, that it's a very serious issue.
Well, the neighborhood of Brentwood Darlington has been dealing with this since 2013, end of 2013, 2014, when Precision Cast Parts was named the nation's number one polluter. Uh-huh. So our history as a neighborhood goes back to there. And then even before that, there have been concerns. And in 2011, there were concerns about McClure and styrene. So we have kind of a longer history than just that precedes the MOS data. But for me personally,
that's when
I became really involved. I was aware back in 2014.
And there are former employees of Precision Cast Parts that have been making complaints for 15, 20 years now.
Right.
Wow. And how about you, Amy? What got you going?
So, Alma.
Alma, go ahead.
That's okay. So I think, like Sarah, I became aware of what was going on with the news coverage around Bullseye and the efforts of the neighbors around that situation. I'm personally friends with some of the people who are part of the Eastside Portland Air Coalition. And so I think just becoming aware of that and starting to wonder, I, as a resident of Coley, what is the impact in my neighborhood? The fact is that the MOS study also highlighted arsenic as a pollutant in my neighborhood. And coming from a neighborhood that is the most diverse neighborhood, where we have a lot of industry and we have a lot of people from immigrant backgrounds, speakers of other languages, and low-income families, I knew right away that there would be a need for more information. And so I wanted to be involved.
Part of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and actually what you're talking about is like the whole climate justice issue becomes a part of this, that people who are in poorer neighborhoods tend to live where there's more industry and, again, more pollution, right? And they don't get taken care of as much. Anyway, we'll get into that.
A lot of traffic in Coley.
Lots of traffic.
Yeah.
So and we're definitely impacted.
Yeah. And isn't Coley the largest and most diverse neighborhood in Portland?
In the state. In the state of Oregon.
Wow.
In 2014, Multnomah County issued a report that highlighted the racial disparities when it comes to environmental concerns. So it said that, in fact, the census tracts in my neighborhood are more impacted environmentally than others. For African Americans and Latinos and Asians, and so we know that is a fact. And so for me, that is sort of my
passion,
you know, what
background.
What pushes me to show up in these conversations and try to be part of it.
Yeah, incredible. Well, and so the Coley Air Action Team just got started right after the MOS studies then, didn't it?
Well, there is a group. It evolved. The name changed. It originated as the Coley Stink Team.
which is an awesome name.
Right. And I have to say, I think it was last year around some concerns around smell of an asphalt company.
Uh-huh.
But it has evolved to where we are today, which is a wider range of concerns given the MOS study and what came from it.
Right. It's not just asphalt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we keep being told that not to worry, that the a smell pollution is not necessarily a pollution, but it's just
false.
Yeah. There's the odor.
Something
there's
is
something
causing
in the
odor.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
It needs at least to be investigated, is
yes,
what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. And then we've got Jessica and Jennifer, and they're both with the Eastside Portland Air Coalition. We're going to say that correctly, too.
Yes.
And so anyway, starting with Jennifer. Jennifer, what got you started?
The MOS study?
The MOS study.
My kids went to Winter Haven and Cleveland. So while our house sits outside of the direct air shed of Bullseye Glass, They went to those neighborhood schools. I was friends with all of the people who fed into those schools, so we knew the people in the neighborhood. And my kids have graduated, but that's the track that they were on for 14, 15 years. So I was pretty devastated that I'd chosen a school and a system that had them breathing that air for so much time. And I went to that first meeting and saw familiar faces, and we all kind of had the same look on our...
There was a lot of you at that meeting, too, wasn't there?
There was a lot.
There was like 750 people at Cleveland.
Oh, at the Cleveland meeting, yeah. But even the first little neighborhood meeting,
right,
there was
right.
like 75 to 100 people. We had to move buildings, even.
Right, right.
It motivated people in a very new and interesting way. People set up Facebook accounts, and it took hold in those first days after the Moss study was released.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of shocking, really, mm-hmm. to be realizing I'm being poisoned.
Yeah, we were blindsided,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
And at the same time, using the same analogy, the blinders were off.
Right.
You know, this idea of Portland being a green city,
right.
that we live in this beautiful environment, suddenly was like, wait. Mm-hmm. Is this real? Is this happening here?
Yeah.
And it was beautiful in that there were a number of us who were saying, oh my God, this is so new. And then there were enough equal people coming forward and saying, no, 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 this is what we've been saying and nobody's mm-hmm. been listening to mm-hmm. us. Uh-huh. So it's like the Moss study and the Bullseye Glass and that perfect storm of neighbors around Bullseye Glass were able to act as an amplifier for all of the voices that have been screaming for years.
Yeah. That's a nice way of saying it. Yeah.
There have been people who've been fighting the diesel front for 15 yeah. plus years.
Right.
Other
right. Back in 2015, they were trying to pass something about this in the legislature here in Oregon, and it got nowhere. So, yeah. We got to talk about diesel. That's a big one for me. And how about you, Jessica?
Yeah, I've lived in the Bullseye neighborhood for 18 years. My kids were born in that neighborhood. I was pregnant in that neighborhood. Uh-huh. And then, so within a half a mile of Bullseye, and then they went to both of the local schools. So they spent literally...
Their whole lives.
99% of their, you know, their mm-hmm. air they've ever breathed is that air. And so... February 3rd, when the Mercury article came out by Dan Forbes, it just was, I felt like I was had. I couldn't believe that here I was, I had this organic garden, I had very healthy practices in my family, and it was all for naught because unbeknownst to me, I was breathing in cadmium and arsenic and
chromium.
Lead and hexavalent chromium. And it's just, it was, I think it launched all of us into this, we have to act and
yeah.
do something.
We can't just ignore it.
Because it's so ultimately heartbreaking.
Right.
And just this sense of betrayal and to know that our children have suffered ill effects. We are suffering ill effects. It's sometimes not directly provable.
Right.
But, you know, we have to do something. And I think that's how we all kind of catapulted into this.
I have a listener just called in and wanted, could each of you just give the name of your street so they could get a sense of where you are
yeah,
exactly?
Sure. I live on Woodward, 28th and Woodward.
Uh-huh. And how about you?
The Bullseye area is southeast. So between Holgate and Powell and, say, 17th and 39th, that would be that Bullseye airshed.
Right. And where do you live?
I live in Coley, and I live near the intersection of Prescott and 77th.
Uh-huh. What neighborhood, what area is Coley?
Like
it's northeast.
It's bordered by Prescott.
Oh, Coley is, it goes, it, the it's kind of an interesting shape, but it's 42nd. And east of 42nd to 82nd,
uh-huh.
and basically south around Prescott and Fremont, north to everything.
Oh, like even to the Columbia Highway.
Yes.
And, wow.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of industry.
It is. It is a large neighborhood.
And diesel.
Yeah.
They have it all.
And
yeah.
How about you, Sarah?
So in Brentwood, Darlington. So I'm near the center of the arsenic hotspot, which is around 57th and Southeast Flavelle Street, not to be confused with Flavelle
right.
Drive. But Precision Cast Parts and our industry is along Johnson Creek, right around 45th, and And so Arrow Heights, which is around 45th, kind of up to, I don't know, right. Flavel, is heavily impacted there.
I think the thing is, like, wherever we live, the idea of being complacent, well, I'm not near this or I'm not near that. I saw a Portland Tribune article that had a map that had little hot spots everywhere.
Right.
Every little...
There's,
you know,
nowhere to run.
I checked. I'm like four blocks from one.
Right.
You know? Like, it's not as big as a big black one,
right.
But it still got... There was arsenic and one that was close to me, and there was cadmium in another one. And it's just like, whoa, you know?
And that's just what we know about.
Right.
I mean, the thing to remember, too, is the moss study is an indicator of where we need to look further.
Right.
It's really not a definitive map for where the damage is.
And it's only heavy metals.
And
also,
exactly.
Air moves, so you can't say I live two blocks from a hot spot.
Right.
Know?
So
I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm
right.
not breathing it. Like,
all over the place.
Yeah. You drive through it, you bike through it, you
and we,
go to parks.
We live in one neighborhood, I work in another neighborhood hot spot.
Right.
So it's there is literally nowhere to run.
And in Brentwood Darlington, we have numerous people who are living in Brentwood Darlington and then work over near Bullseye. And so they're being affected by two heavily impacted, neighborhoods.
Anyway, just to let listeners know, you're hearing from Alma Velasquez of the Coley Air Action Team, Sarah Clark with South Portland Air Quality, Jennifer Jones and Jessica Applegate, who are both part of the Eastside Portland Air Coalition, and they're talking here about toxins in our air and what we can do about them. So, and if you want to call in with your own questions, the number here is 503-231-8187. So we have this issue with these chemicals, And I wanted to focus a little bit more on hexavalent chromium and diesel. So what's the deal with hexavalent chromium? That's and the other thing about these moss studies is you keep hearing them saying, well, there's this stuff is in the moss, but it's really not in the air, or it's not in the air or in horrible amounts or something. What can we trust here actually?
I think we can trust the moss. It would be great if OHA would look to people and study people to see how we're being affected. But in lieu of that, moss only breathes in the air. That's its only source of nutrient. So the moss study is a perfect indicator of what's in the air and what we're breathing.
Well, and then when OHA did all the soil sampling and the soil samples came back and they said, oh, we're all clear. The soil doesn't contain these hazardous air pollutants. Well, it is soil. And so think of the moss. The moss doesn't necessarily grow in soil. It grows...
Right, on rocks.
On rocks and on its own. And a lot of plants are, I think the word is a bioremediator. Mm-hmm. So
they're sucking it up.
They're sucking it up. So, the leafy greens that I have in my garden, maybe the soil is fine, but the plant material itself isn't fine. And in fact, we've had a couple people in our group pay on their own to get their plant tissue tested. And indeed, there was very high levels of toxics found in the plant tissue that wasn't necessarily found in the soil.
Well, so like I'm growing some blueberries, it might be in the blueberries.
It depends on what your blueberries are full of. So if you eat something that takes a lot of iron from the ground and puts it in the leaves, cadmium, for instance, is biomimic. Iron. So your plant will
take up the cadmium as well as the iron.
And then your body will use it similarly.
So we're talking about mostly leafy greens? Is that the most concern?
Iron.
Yeah.
And the cruciferous. So we're thinking of like
kale,
broccoli.
Kale, broccoli, Brussels sprouts,
cabbage.
You know, those things that we grow in our gardens, thinking we're being healthy.
And so hexavalent chromium is something that came up a lot, though. Mm-hmm. What's the story with that? What does that do to us, or why is that such a big issue? It was like with Bullseye Glass had it. What's happening? It's apparently.
It got popular. It got sexy after Aaron Brockovich brought it up with the PG&E in California. The problem with saying what does any of these things do to us is then people can walk away and say, well, I don't have lung cancer, so I haven't been poisoned by chrome 6. But the the real indication is we don't know what each of us is going to do internally with the things that we're breathing.
And or the long-term health effects aren't being looked at.
Uh-huh. I mean, when it will show up.
Right, and OHA is reporting, well, short-term health studies show that levels are at or below benchmarks. And so what we really want, we want to know what the long-term health effects are for people that have lived in these neighborhoods for decades or their entire lifespan.
Or how they work together. How
synergetic effects.
Yeah, some of these toxics will block receptors in your body so that instead of pulling iron out, you now pull something else out. So they all work together, and you can't tell me that I met my toxic load and then now I'm okay and you're off the hook for it, when 10 years from now I may find myself in another situation where somebody else gives me my full toxic load. There has to be accountability for the lifespan of a human being
over 70 years, right? And right. So that gets me to this whole issue then of acceptable risk, and why we have regulations that allow something that we call acceptable risk. Mm. And can you any of you guys address that? Like, what's the issue with that? And it seems like part of what the problem is that it's acceptable risk for our health in terms of allowing businesses to keep making their profits and, quote, providing us with jobs. And but the regulations are, it seems like, for instance, the DEQ isn't really regulating the way, you know, we want for our health. And why is that? What's the whole issue around that?
Well, I think that...
Where do we start?
Yeah.
A lot of, I mean, as was pointed out a couple of weeks ago, regulation in a way was formed to protect industry from environmentalists, let's say, instead of protecting the people from the ill effects of industry practices. And so a lot of what we have is regulation set up to do that. And then you do have regulation, but then it's not enforced. And so it's this really dysfunctional system that we're trying to work within. And so that's where our groups kind of come into this play of, do we work within this system and try to work with DEQ and create solutions? Do we go completely out of the system? And we're finding ourselves in this interesting, I think, time in our country where we kind of have to do both. It's not the old either or paradigm. And so that's been, mm-hmm. I think, different this time. Mm-hmm. I know our groups, we're trying to work with DEQ and OHA, but at the same time kind of retain that public outside voice, be willing to do direct actions. And it feels new to me because I'm new to it, but I know that there have been people that have been involved in this for years and decades.
Right.
And acceptable risk seems so cold. It's such a cold-sounding statement.
I know.
But there's reality to it. We live in an industrial world, and people's lives are saved by the equipment and the medical tools that we're able to make. And so, you know, my father had an open heart surgery, and part of the medical equipment that made that possible saved his life. So when we talk about acceptable risk, we say, if we can save an extra 10 lives per 10,000 people, but by the making of the equipment, we can potentially harm or kill 2 people out of 10,000. It's just shuffling the dice around as to, you know, who is harmed by what we've done. We all have our cell phones, we're all driving cars, we're all living industrial lives. So unfortunately, acceptable risk becomes part of the conversation unless we want to go back to not right. having those things.
I just wanted to address something that Jessica brought up, and is the idea of a system, like the system that we have set up right now with DEQ as the Department of Environmental Quality,
right.
that it gives you a sense, it gave me a sense as an average layperson that they are there to protect the environment and to look out to ensure that I, as a citizen, you know, was protected. But in fact, when you look deep, you realize that not only is it chronically underfunded, but in the way it operates, is just flawed in terms of it surviving on the permits that it, so it depends on the permits that it issues to industry
for its own funding.
So there's like a conflict of interest right there. And so it's like you almost have to start from scratch,
I feel. It's a disempowered agency in terms of its funding and then in terms of its structure. Like Alma's saying, you know, that DEQ's revenue source comes from the issuing of permits to industry.
That it's supposed to be checking out.
But then if they issue a fine to industry, that money received doesn't actually go back to DEQ. It goes into the general fund. So DEQ doesn't have any incentive to fine and oversee.
Mm. Oh.
And then you have this thing of Clean Air Oregon, and it's this novel revolutionary concept that DEQ and OHA would be working together in tandem and
Oregon
in
Health.
Such harmony. Yes, Oregon Health Authority.
Authority, yeah.
Like, why haven't they been working together before, last month?
Right.
So, to me, that's shocking. So I think that there's an element of coasting that's been happening.
Yes.
And they're just working on sort of old premises and default. And I think this is really a time for them to change. And that's where our regulatory overhaul
is that needs to come into play now? Like the idea that might come in, like there might be regulatory overhaul. I know that you guys were meeting with politicians. Are they talking about doing that?
I think
overhaul's a strong word.
Regulatory change.
Yeah.
Well, and I do think we have to give credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
And our governor she is trying to create this thing called Cleaner Air Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And so that is statewide regulatory reform that will be completed supposedly by December 2017. So while that's great, it's also when we look at the actual advisory committees that are being put together to make these decisions, it's really the same old cast of characters. So it's industry, it's government, it's the same. And we want to know how real change can happen within that system.
Right.
And we were promised, I mean, you think of the precautionary principle in terms of environmental regulation, and transparency is of the utmost importance.
Yes.
Public engagement, putting health first, having, you know, polluters pay for the damage they do instead of the polluters have to prove they're safe. We don't need to walk around proving how sick we are.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And it has to be statewide. Anything less than statewide would be a crime against environmental justice.
Absolutely.
Right. Because if you go around creating, if you go around creating situations like good neighbor agreements where industry and neighbors are coming up with solutions that do not address the systemic problems that we've been talking about statewide, that means that only the people with access or only the people who are able to invest the time and the money in becoming involved and have the know-how, have the language skills, I have a master's degree, I speak two languages, and this has been an education for me. Learning the vocabulary that I need to speak around these topics and sounding, you know, like I know what I'm talking about. It's really been an evolution for me of learning. So what I'm saying is, we have to address it statewide. Uh-huh. Otherwise, we leave a lot of people out.
Right.
And that is a disservice to us all, ultimately.
Right. And there's also like this idea of what is acceptable risk again, and addressing things statewide. For instance, in California, I just read that the diesel levels there that they allow are like, what was it? It was 0.0003 parts per million. And In Oregon, it's 0.1. And so in California, they are now selling their old diesel trucks to Oregonians because they're not allowed to drive those things anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so why would our acceptable risk be greater than the acceptable risk in California? I mean,
that's a good question for the lobbyists.
We've sold our airshed.
Okay, we have two calls. Who was the first one? Polly, would you like to just ask your question?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it It isn't a question because I've been following this issue just because I'm very proactive about my health. I wanted to say that the Portland Tribune, March 1st, did a huge map of where all the hotspots are. Basically, all of Multnomah County's air is worse than like 80% of the country.
Right.
They did really good stats. The other thing I wanted to add was I live downtown. I am wearing a 3M particulate mask that has a little vent in it, and you can buy them for $22. And I'm doing that for my own protection, even though it won't filter out a lot. It'll do something. And also to put pressure on our politicians to do something and not take 10 years to fix this, because I'm pissed. I moved here for clean air and greenery. I did not move here to get a cancer that I'm not.
Right. Well, you might want to join one of these groups then.
Definitely. Where do you live?
Welcome you, Holly.
I mean, we're all being wearing masks like they do in China, you know, which is like that might be what we have to start doing to get it out there. That's
what I am doing.
That's
just
great.
For my own protection. Yeah. And I'm trying to put it on the air. Please join me in wearing a mask, because otherwise they will just keep making money off of giving us illnesses that we'll deal with in 10 or 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you mentioned, I first learned about this problem from a group called Portland Clean Air, and I paid them $5 donation, and they gave me a map of all the hot spots, and that was before all this publicity came out.
Uh-huh.
So these people are really on it.
They are amazing. Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, we love them.
Okay, I need to let you go just a minute,
sure.
Because I'm gonna just tell what we're doing here. This is the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. You're hearing from Alma Velasquez of the Cully Air Action Team, Sarah Clark with South Portland Air Quality, Jennifer Jones and Jessica Applegate of the Eastside Portland Air Coalition. And we're talking about air and what we can do about it. And there was one other caller, Sarah.
Hi. I don't live in Portland. I did visit Portland recently, and I have a friend that lives there. And I was actually thinking about moving to Portland because it's so pretty and so green. But I did have a question. I was concerned about I noticed that you have a lot of cell towers along the freeway. So I was concerned about that. And then this is the first I heard about the dirty air. So I was watching a Prince interview, and he was talking about chemtrails. I was wondering if anybody has studied that at all.
We have the Hillsboro. There's a group in Hillsboro that is very into aviation air pollution. Aviation fuel is still leaded. They actually have petitioned to allow lead in there because it's good for their engines, I think. So there's a whole group that's fighting very hard to make some huge changes in the way that we treat our airlines, and especially our smaller jets that stay under a certain level so that those pollutants fall into our air shed. And as far as moving to Portland, I say this: the air is bad everywhere. Come to Portland, join a group, and help us fight to make it better here.
Good. And what is being done? I want to just get to that now a little bit. So I know that you guys said you met with Blumenauer, Merkley, and Wyden. And what did they have to say?
In our dreams, we met with their staff. They were great. They are fighting for the exact same things that we're fighting for. Their message is clear that without the pressure that the public puts on all of legislators, their job in the Senate and in Congress is just as hard as our job outside of it. So we need all of us, we need lots of us, and we need a lot of consistency.
So is this like the pressure is petitions? Is it, what is it exactly? How do we put pressure on them?
We put pressure on them by continuing to call every day. Every day you put it on your schedule and you call and you say, hey, Merry Christmas. What are we doing about fighting
toxics in our air and making industry accountable for their pollution.
Mm. Just have an app on the phone and
that's
make
right.
it go.
That's right.
It can seem like you're talking into a void, but making those phone calls and sending those emails actually is huge. Mm-hmm. It does make a difference. And the more people who do that, the better the results. And ultimately, this is in some ways a battle against our industry lobbyists. And that's kind of who we're up against. And so when we talk about legislative changes, that's what it comes down to. It's people, right. People versus lobbyists.
And also going down to Salem, you also met with Michael Dembroy, and he is the fellow who's trying to get some laws passed back in 2015 here in Oregon about diesel. That those actions failed, but he's trying again. And what is he up to? What's he working on?
He's really focused on the diesel, and we are as well. I mean, I think that is the number one health concern, even above heavy metals in the airshed. It's diesel. One thing that people can do in order to have effective pollution control legislation is to just be aware of the health effects on them from these substances in our air, whether it's the diesel or the wood smoke or the air toxics. Just that awareness alone can help people become versed in the subject. All of this, I mean, I think a lot of people are intimidated because they don't know the nomenclature or the language, and none of us did either. We're just regular moms and citizens. But just getting knowledge about your own health is the first step. And diesel particulate matter is especially harmful to health. And it especially affects disproportionately people of color.
Mm-hmm. People who live near freeways.
Exactly.
And our vulnerable population. I work with seniors as an advocate, and they're particularly susceptible to diesel pollutants because their arteries are older. And we just heard this statistic, on an inversion day, the inversion day is where the city of Portland says, don't mow your lawns today and cut down your travel, where the cloud cover hangs really low. There will be 2 days of inversion will lead to 5 extra hospitalizations and 2 extra deaths from some sort of pulmonary heart attack or stroke.
Beautiful.
Due to the pollutants in the air. So really, we're killing off all of our vulnerable population.
And children, of course. Let's think about
driving away
children.
Businesses. Yeah. I mean, in the Bullseye neighborhood alone, I know people who have shut down their businesses. They're selling their homes. These are affluent, creative people who contribute to our economy.
And
they're
people.
Leaving. It is not a good business
right.
model.
These are jobs
they're taking. To just pollute at will.
Right. We have another caller, by the way. Who's the caller? Sunny, would you like to ask your question?
Yes, well, actually, I wanted to say thank you to all you ladies today and all the volunteers at KBOO for coming forward with this important information. And it sounds to me like all of you are participating in something that takes a fair amount of time, for sure, and effort, and I further appreciate that. And perhaps those of us who cannot learn these new scientific languages or whatever, maybe our forte isn't quite in that area, but there are you hardy folks that are doing it. Maybe we can figure out a way to help you all so you have enough time to carry on, not that you can do all of it. So, for instance, if you were in my neighborhood and I could get acquainted with you, if there were a way I could bring over a bunch of fresh prepped vegetables and put them on your doorstep so that you have something a little bit easier.
Well, nobody's cleaned my toilet in months.
I would clean your toilet.
That is so incredibly kind, but that's why we have husbands.
Well, you know what? I think it's important, though.
Not all of us.
Or not, yeah.
It's going to take a lot of work, and everybody should pitch in.
Yeah,
that's very kind. You know, if you go to our website, the eastsideportlandair.org, there are also little ways that you can get involved. And
5-minute actions.
5-minute actions. And that you're incredibly kind. Thank you so much.
I think I'm being practical. And then the last thing I wanted to say is when you're talking about the folks that are moving out that are connected to money
and such, that's going to make an impression. So that lady who just called in before about the filter mask, which I'm going to try to go out and get one myself, I think she's right on track. I mean, it could slow down gentrification considerably.
Right.
Thousands of people are wearing the masks, and we're bringing attention to the true state of our air. I'm going
it's not
to
a very
join
pretty
her
picture.
In that. And I appreciate all of this. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sunny. Thank you, Sunny. And something else that I read about that is happening, there's supposedly these temporary rules in place. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you guys could tell me what these temporary rules are. And this is like until the stuff happens in 2017, right?
Well, the temporary rules in place right now are around specifically art glass manufacturers. So in our neighborhood, we were not willing to negotiate with Bullseye and to make backroom deals or a good neighbor agreement. We just wanted change, and we wanted a cease and desist. And we've actually gotten two since then. And the temporary rules were created, I think, in large part just because of the public pressure, and we were not willing to compromise on that. Uh-huh. And so these are different than the Cleaner Air Oregon rules that are coming into play for industrial air toxics, wood, smoke, and diesel. These are really specific art glass rules that are going to become permanent. So the question is now, I've been thinking about this, are these rules going to be grandfathered into the
Cleaner Air Act?
Yeah. And so I've just been thinking about that today, wondering what that relationship's going to
be. And so is that partly I read that they're going to be testing now 100 facilities in the next 6 weeks or something, and overall 300 new facilities are going to be tested. Is this all part of the temporary rules?
No, that's part of the Cleaner Air Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Looking for, wasn't it specifically the hexavalent chromium?
No, I think Interim Director Pete Shepard has asked 316, I might have that number
wrong. Yeah, they've
wrong.
Identified it, yeah.
Companies in Oregon for a list of a variety of data, like their material safety data sheets, and I think, and production schedules and all of that. So I think they're trying to get a sense of what actually is happening. And, uh-huh. I think that's a first step for them is to determine what's happening. But it's not, to my knowledge, it's not centered around just hexavalent chromium, although I think that's top of the list, is to identify who the top hexavalent chromium emitters are and then to begin to address that.
Right.
So I personally haven't seen the 100 who's been identified as the first 100. But
it's sort of like
there is a list out there.
There has been some pressure, and they are beginning to start doing these tests. And like you say, and then I also read that maybe at Precision Cast Parts, they were going to check what they were producing at maximum. Maybe a few days ago, they were going to be checking something at Precision Cast Parts.
So Precision Cast Parts has installed some new emission controls, and they are currently doing third-party verification to see how those controls are working and if they're capturing what they're supposed to be capturing. So this is not a DEQ verification. This is a third-party verification that Precision Cast Parts has paid for, and DEQ has been essentially sort of notified and kind of signed off on. They're doing that for the next for the rest of this week.
And then one problem I read about that is that the company that is actually doing the verification, there's some questions about how tied in, again, it's sort of like with the DEQ issues, how tied in they are to Precision Cast Parts itself.
Right, so they are hired and paid for by Precision Cast Parts. So this goes back to that issue of our industry self-reporting and monitoring themselves. So this is another instance of that where we have industry who is providing the verification that their emission controls are doing what they should be doing, instead of having our regulatory agencies providing that verification.
And this is something all of you would like to change, I assume?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
When I first got involved, I was under the misinformation, or I guess the idea that if you had
500 pounds of lead that you were putting into your product, that 500 pounds of lead was used in the product. And like baking a cake, if I'm going to use a cup of flour, I know that a cup of flour is in my cake. When in fact, industry knows that if they use 500 pounds of lead, actually only 20% of that will be captured in their product. And the other 80% will be volatilized into the air through their stacks. So it's very unlike the way we scientifically bake. They know what they're using, they know what they're capturing, and they know what they're volatilizing. So the pretending that they don't know and they don't want to tell us, or that it is part of a secret formula that they don't want to share, is a way of
avoiding
the conversation.
Right. Mm-hmm. We have another caller. Clem, what'd you like to say?
Very briefly, I worked around zinc chromate. It came in a powdered form like talcum, and we put it in the diesel engines to keep the rust out of the water jackets. And the best they gave us was these flimsy so-called medical masks where everything comes in the side. Anyway, not long after that, like 4 or 5 years, I was diagnosed with hypothyroidism, and that's all I want to say about it. The stuff's been around a long time, but in powdered forms, it's when it's worst. They used it during World War II, zinc chromate, to coat solder joints on all electronic equipment. Well, solid states did away with a lot of that stuff. So
right. Well, there's just thousands and thousands of these chemicals, and it's like we really need to get on top of it.
Yes, but the thing about hypothyroidism, it has many symptoms, and you have to start looking for it early.
Okay. Clem, I think that's a good point in that, you know, as we have our discussions with the Oregon Health Authority, and we talk about the impacts of the air and, you know, the quality of our air, Oregon Health Authority often wants to identify really specific types of cancer or have a really narrow look at what's happening to our health and the impacts of our health. And this unknown of autoimmune disorders and neurological defects because of the air or water that we're drinking. I mean, there's a broader spectrum, and so you're bringing up the thyroid issues,
right.
And that fits into that.
It does, and when you think about there's like two things that we heavily legislate. It's the lead and it's asbestos, and it's because we know exactly the one or two things that those cause.
Yeah.
So without a direct correlation, there's a general population that puts its head in the sand and says, I don't want to think about this, and we can't regulate it if we don't know what the exact effect is. And that's false as well.
Okay, I just want to let listeners know you're tuned to KBOO Portland. This is the Recovery Zone, a show about healing our world. We want to heal our air. And so you're hearing from Alma Velasquez of the Cully Air Action Team, Sarah Clark with South Portland Air Quality, and Jennifer Jones and Jessica Applegate of the Eastside Portland Air Coalition, talking about the toxins in our air and what we can do about it. You can also call here, 503-231-8187. We have 15 minutes less to go, so try to get a little more in. One of the things that I read is something that's going on in Eugene where, like, I guess in Portland, we're measuring our air in terms of tons of stuff that these smokestacks are putting out or something. I mean, like, it's hard to believe tons. But anyway, in Eugene, they passed a law in 1996. They called it the Clean Air something or another. And it was basically really monitoring what goes into an industry, as you were saying, and then what goes out. And so, and it seems like they're pretty pleased with that. And do you guys know anything about that or what's happening?
Is that LaRapa? Is that the Eugene Air Authority?
Yes, it sounds like, and it sounds like the right to know.
The right to know.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So people, and it's on a website, people can check what has gone in, like you're baking your mm-hmm. cake, what's gone into this, and then what's coming out, mm-hmm. and then what's going into the air. Somehow they've got this all figured out in Eugene.
And I would like to point out that the reason they have some of that figured out is because they'd made a local air authority. And before you jump and say, well, then we should all have local air authorities, if they didn't have a local air authority and they had pushed for that to be statewide, then that would now be protecting all of Oregon.
Right.
When you go for when you try to break everything apart, when you go for a good neighbor agreement or you go for a local air authority, you disenfranchise other communities that either aren't aware of the problem yet or they don't have the resources to fight. And really the only way that we can make any changes that is good for any of us is for this to be statewide regulatory reform. You never know when you're going to be transferred to Grants Pass or Klamath Falls, and if you've put all your work into your local polluter three blocks away, you're going to be kind of up a creek when you head somewhere else.
I want to go back to this cake analogy and this idea of food, because one of the residents in Cully, his name is Victor, came up with this idea in a meeting about food labels. And he was talking about how companies that produce food that we purchase,
right?
I mean, there we have a choice. We can go to the shelves at the supermarket and choose what we want based on what's on the label. I mean, you could do that. With the air we breathe, we can't help it. It is what it is.
Right.
But I don't have a way as a resident to go to a company and figure out what they are emitting and how it's impacting my body.
Beautiful.
So that information is not available. And
right.
And I don't have a choice like I do at the supermarket. I have to breathe it. And I move around the city and I breathe bullseye glass, even though their air, what they're emitting, even though I live in Northeast because I work in Southeast.
Uh-huh. And so, yeah, just walking here, I walk like 25 blocks, and what if I breathe the whole way here, you know?
And I know it's off topic, but one of the things that really makes me angry is that our government gets to decide what we breathe without any input from us,
right.
And then we are not covered on health effects. So if I have, if I get bladder cancer from my cadmium intake, the cadmium intake that DEQ has allowed, that the EPA has regulated at a certain standard,
as acceptable risk,
I could go bankrupt because I'm responsible for the health effects of that. And I don't like the disparity between...
We need lawsuits.
Yeah.
Oh, and we have a caller. David, what would you like to say, David?
Yeah, hi. I just want to say that the one toxin that is around us at all times and is never seems to make it to the public discourse is the microwaves, from microwave radiation from cell towers and wireless devices in homes, and especially in schools, because children and pregnant women are far more harmed by that. And what we're looking at now is 5G is coming, which means there will be many, many more thousands of what are called small cell antennas that they do not have to notify the neighborhood of. They put them up on the top of poles. And these will be going up every few blocks.
Right.
So there's virtually no way that we can escape that.
Well, David, I think that what we're talking about here is that we really want to address the issues before we're impacted by them. And so, again, if we could start having tests and studies, would you guys agree that just more tests, more studies before we start?
I don't know.
Well,
I mean,
actually don't need more tests.
And I would agree with you on that point. I think some of the whole, you know, it's kind of, Jennifer said a couple months ago, that's really it's a whole game of not it, basically, when it comes to the DEQ and the OHA. And we have the studies. We know there's harmful effect.
You go.
Yeah. Yes,
you know, that's
industry
has bought our airshed.
Studies.
Yeah,
right.
It's inconclusive.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
It's true. But then I'll go back to the idea that that cell phone, the way our society works now, is predicated on cell phone use, and so there's a give and take with some of that as well.
Yeah, they make it almost impossible not to have one, although I don't have one, but you know, school curriculum now virtually requires wireless technology.
Yep.
Okay. We do have another caller, okay. David, but thank you for that much. Input. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Dave, who's the next caller? Anne. Anne, would you like to just mention something or say something to us?
Yeah, I have a quick question.
Okay.
First of all, I applaud all of you. And second of all, my question is, since we know working through systems is slow at best, what kind of civil disobedience is being organized to target the top polluters in our area so that we can really bring public awareness and also impact their economics, because that's the way they really respond.
I think,
I'd like to know about civil disobedience in the Portland metro area.
Yeah, and that is really interesting. I think direct action is a very powerful tool, and it's definite. We've had a few episodes where we went downtown and we took up boxes and boxes of vegetables from our gardens and served them directly to DEQ on Joni Hammond's first day as interim director. And we've participated in rallies in the Dalles around Emeritize. And, you know, 350.org recently had a great direct action against the oil cars in
the Dalles area.
In the Dalles area in Mosier. So if you go to our website, we are planning different things. We're not really at the point where we're talking about it on the air, but you can definitely connect with us via our website. And
help organize it.
And help organize it. Yes, definitely.
If you have some legal civil disobedient ideas, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, so we should get everybody before, because we got about 5 minutes left. Just name all your websites and things that are happening with your groups. So maybe start with you, Sarah.
Okay. South Portland Air Quality. So we are at southportlandairquality.org, and you can also find us on Facebook at South Portland Air Quality.
South Portland. And how about you, Amy? Alma.
So like I mentioned before, our group evolved from being the Coley Stink Team to the Coley Air Action Team. And so our website is still coleystinkteam.net.
Okay.
But you can go also on Facebook and find us Coley Air Action Team and get in touch with us that way.
Okay.
We're at eastsideportlandair.org and on Facebook at East Side Portland Air Coalition. And one of our missions is to support all our advocacy groups in the entire state of Oregon and the country if need be. So you've only heard about three neighborhoods here today, but there are many affected neighborhoods. There's the Hayden Island group. There's
right.
the North Portland Air Quality. There's St. John's. There's Woodstock. So there are, if you have a neighborhood that is not addressed yet, then start an air quality team yourself. Contact Jessica or myself at Eastside Portland Air Coalition and ask one of us to come and speak to your neighborhood association. And Alma does a workshop about finding your polluter. And every person here that you're hearing today is willing and able and would love to come and help support you in your creating of a group or finding your polluter.
And you can start from zero, from knowing zero. Absolutely nothing to just
guys,
being concerned.
Because
that's how we did.
We all knew nothing.
So that's no longer an excuse.
No. Make a tiny little slice on your plate for
right.
this.
Yes.
And one last caller. Polly again.
Oh, yes. I just wanted to let everyone know that much of this research is already done by the group PortlandCleanAir.org.
Right,
yes.
PortlandCleanAir.org is working closely with all of our groups.
Yep.
They are amazing. They're one of the groups that we're building coalition together so that we can figure out how to share information. And their access to resources, they're the number one reason that we have as much information as we have,
Absolutely.
As you're saying, Polly. The people from Portland Clean Air sat in the DEQ office and scanned all of the documents that they insisted.
One by one.
And if you've met Greg, he's a force. So
I just wanted to let the public know that their brochure that I got for all of $5 and maybe is on their website lists exactly which chemicals. So you could go today, I believe, and get
this brochure.
Their website is amazing and very, very user-friendly.
You could.
Yeah, and it gives all the pounds released yep. in 2013. And if they're carcinogenic, mutagenic, or if they're toxic, it just spreads it all out for you.
Lots and lots of information is what it sounds like. Yeah.
Yep.
And I have experience wearing masks, and I did find that the air mask that has a little button on it to let your air out is way more comfortable to wear.
Okay. Stick that on the websites.
Thank you, Polly.
Sure.
Thanks a lot. Yeah. So, and then I just noticed, too, that at the Eastside Portland Air, there's something coming up June 28th and June 29th. We have a couple of minutes left here, and something called the Clean Air Webinar.
So that is a program through the DEQ that's part of the whole unfolding of the governor's Cleaner Air Oregon. And while I applaud the governor for kind of creating Cleaner Air Oregon in response to the air toxics crisis, it's almost kind of a non-thing. Uh-huh. I don't find the webinars particularly useful.
It's just like, yeah.
It's kind of, it's more placation and busy work for the public. I don't mean to be so negative, but I feel like that's the truth uh-huh. about it.
Trying to be transparent.
Right, trying to be transparent, but also, you know, they allow public questions at the end, but it's a prescribed program.
Right, more technical.
So, and this is my problem with the whole thing, kind of the big picture, is it's a lot of, for lack of a better word, like this neoliberal kind of greenwashing and co-opting all of these buzzwords to make it think like they're doing something. And so I not only feel betrayed once, but twice
uh-huh.
by this mentality, to not let the public or Physicians for Social Responsibility on their technical advisory board, which is going to make our permanent statewide rules, things like that, where yeah. there's no transparency, there's really not a good representation of health effects being addressed. It's
in advocacy groups.
Right.
It's yeah. inadequate.
I think that's a great way to wrap all this up. We've got to really take action here. And you've been listening to Alma Velasquez of the Collier Action Team, Sarah Clark with South Portland Air Quality, Jennifer Jones and Jessica Applegate of the Eastside Portland Air Coalition. And we've got bad air. We've got to do something about it. This has been the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter. And I want to thank Tammy for her fine engineering. And thank you for listening.
Thank you.
It's 12 noon here at KBOO Portland, KBOO.FM on the web, and that's it for public affairs programming for the morning. The KBOO Noon News is up next, and then stay tuned for jazz.
This is KBOO Headline News at Noon for Wednesday, June 22, 2016. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, Tuesday night, the Beaverton City Council approved a 4% lodging tax to provide the money needed to pay for a $45 million performing arts center. This avoids raising the money through an increased property tax.